today on Follow Our Lead. I talk with Anna Welsh, leadership coach, motivational speaker, culture consultant, and owner of Anna Welsh Coaching and Consulting. Anna earned a certificate of professional coaching from NYU's School of Professional Studies and served as the vice president of a company with over 1,200 employees across 90 locations. Anna worked closely with the CEO to build a culture centered around employee engagement and core values. Join us as we uncover the importance of developing leadership at all levels. Anna, it is such a pleasure to have you on the Follow Our Lead podcast. I finally have a leadership coach that I can talk leadership with.
This is actually my first podcast, so it's very, very exciting. My goal is to make it fun, make you or our viewers laugh, and hopefully our viewers take away some actionable items that they can use in their workplace. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So exciting. And first, I want to talk a little bit about you and your journey as a motivational speaker and a coach. Is this a career path you always envisioned for yourself, or was there something else you wanted to be when you grew up?
Oh, yes. There were many things I wanted to be when I grew up. I wanted to be a teacher. Then I wanted to be on SNL. And then I wanted to be a news reporter. Outside of school, my first job outside of school was at NBC News in DC. And working in politics and news, I learned very quickly that I did not want to do that. So I moved just outside of New York City in Hoboken, New Jersey. I just met my now husband, and I knew I wanted to be in the city. And I had no idea what I was going to do. I was a waitress in college for 7 years. It's how I paid my way cash through school. And I just got a waitressing job. Ran into an old high school friend who was working for a public relations firm, got me an internship there. That got me my first real big girl job. Realized, with all due respect to PR industry, I didn't want to be in public relations. And then knew someone that got me a job in pharmaceutical sales. And I did that. That's how I met my former boss and CEO, Dr. Eric Schreiger from Schreiger Dermatology Group. I ended up working there for 10 years. I started as the 11th employee. We had just opened up the second office. When I left, we had over 1,200 employees and 93 offices. The first 4 years, I was head of operations and really just helping Dr. Schreiger grow. I was his right hand for years. And then I had my son, who's now 6. I went on mat leave, came back, and they offered me a new role being head of employee experience, which is a fancy way for HR. But really what they tapped me with was to reduce turnover, build a culture. At the time, our turnover was 60%, 60, which was insane. We were just growing so rapidly. We didn't really have a tight foundation for a culture and engagement program. So his goal was reduce turnover. That's really your number one KPI. So together, we did a lot with staff, core values, employee programs and such. And that's when I realized I love working with people and developing them and helping them be their best selves at work. And very long story short, that's what led me into then realizing this next chapter of my career, I wanted to focus just on that. And I learned all about coaching. I enrolled at NYU's School of Professional Studies professional coaching program. It was, you know, really like going back to school, tuition, reading, everything. But I learned all about coaching and decided to open up my LLC and do that for a while, realized I loved it. And that's when I resigned. I gave them 2 months notice. I turned them into my first corporate client. And I've been really focusing on coaching individuals, leadership trainings. I did tons of speaking engagements and meeting facilitation and hosting at my former company as a corporate executive. And that's my goal, is to have that be kind of phase two of my current company and business model now.
That's amazing. So inspiring. And I think it's a great way for people to look at, you know, sometimes your career journey is not always linear and you're bouncing around to different things. And the idea that you had in your head for yourself isn't what happens. So I think it's great that somebody like you, who's a leadership coach, didn't always grow up and say that you wanted to be a leadership coach, but it definitely suits you. And I could see you being a newscaster as well, because you're very well spoken, but we're going to get there.
Well, I do have a reel from when I was in my 20s when I wanted to be a newscaster that I may or may not share with you if you really want to.
Oh, I really hope you do, because that would be amazing. And we're going to get to some of the themes that you talked about just now in this last question, but I want to talk about your social media presence. You are super active on social media, especially on Instagram. I love watching your reels, but in one of your reels in particular really struck me. You had shared a story that you had come to the United States just before you started kindergarten, and that when you came, you didn't speak the language. Being a young child in a country that's new to you with people who may not look like you, not being able to understand. So talk to us about how your immigrant experience shaped the way that you lead.
Well, for starters, it forced me to learn communication skills at a very young age, because my mom's English, you know, she was still learning English. So imagine, you know, when you're young, you can pick up a different language very quickly. But as an adult in a new country, also for both of my parents and then family members that immigrated after us and lived with us for a short time, learned English and got a job and settled and got an apartment or a home, I was their translator. So I had to learn to speak in a professional, respectful way at a young age to help my family members, you know, get settled here. And that has really helped me in terms of communicating with so many different people of different ages, of different backgrounds, of different styles. It's helped me be comfortable speaking to strangers, frankly. And it's helped me also help others feel comfortable speaking to people of different walks of life as well. Now I look back, I understand probably how me as a young, resilient child, like most children are, would get through it. But I also have to give props to my parents, because now as a mom myself and being older than when they moved here, I don't even know how they did it. But yes, it's helped me learn communication skills and being a chameleon, if you will, at a very young age. And it's still giving me that skill I still use till this day. And I utilize it in my practice as well.
I've watched many of your social media videos, but that one in particular really stuck with me. It's an awesome, awesome video. So for those of you listening, we're going to link Anna's profile so you can check it out, because it's really something to see. You have a variety of different clients, all different ages and all different places in their career. But what are some of the most common pitfalls or challenges that you see amongst the largest group of your clients? And what suggestions do you have for overcoming those?
So much of workplace productivity, efficiency, team synergy, really what makes work successful and somewhat easier, boils down to confidence and communication. First off, with confidence, it's human nature for us to second guess ourselves and seek approval from others. Not everyone seeks approval from others, but a large group of individuals do. In particular, if you're new in an organization, new in a role, or trying to promote yourself and move up. So when you're stuck second guessing yourself, when you're stuck just in your head and not sure if what you're doing is the right thing or what your boss wants to do, your productivity goes down, first of all. And then your work quality also gets diminished because you're not even sure, because you're not confident. And then that segues into communication. What you're feeling in your head may not actually be a fact. If you think that your boss doesn't like you, you may not have proof of that. It may just be in your head. So how can we manage up, as they say, and communicate with either peers, your boss, or whatnot to understand, hey, was that presentation what you expected? Do you have any feedback for me on that presentation? I'm a bulletproof vest. Please share your feedback. How do you think I'm doing so far? Is there anything that you think I can improve on? But having that kind of self-awareness, number one, to even know to ask those questions, and then the courage and confidence, number two, to start those conversations. It can be scary if you don't have the right communication structure and verbiage to do that. So many times team members or even cross team members don't get along. It's just some energies just don't vibe with one another. How can you have the confidence to work through that via, you know, effective communication? So it really, I have clients that are first-time managers in a manufacturing company. I have a probably late 40s, early 50-year-old director that just got promoted. I have a younger go-getter in California in a different industry. So it's in another person in healthcare that's younger, that's, you know, an emerging leader. The same themes bubble up is confidence, communication, time management, and organization also would probably be secondary. Clarity in terms of, hey, where do they even want to be promoted to, or what do they even want to do in their lives? But really, I would say the number two themes is confidence and communication.
So along that line, if somebody is a new leader at a company, how are they able to kind of gain the respect and credibility that they want to have? Being an effective communicator is something that is so hard to do. For me in particular, I have so many ideas in my head, but they don't always come out in the stream of thought that I would like them to, because there's just so much in there. So talk to us first about how you're able to gain the respect and credibility as a new leader, but also, what are your suggestions for being a more effective communicator?
So to answer your first question, build connections. You're a new leader there. People don't know you. Start aiming, I hate to use this word, but to vibe with people. Build connections and rapport, that human connection where you're either making someone smile or you're saying something that really resonated with them, or you're showing humility and they're seeing a human side of you versus, you know, only communicating via email or Teams chat or Slack. Try to really build a rapport with them. So that way, let's say they have feedback for you, they feel more comfortable sharing feedback. Or let's say they have an idea that they want to run by you, they're comfortable doing that. Start building relationships. So much of everything in life, from teenagers to my kindergartner right now, to my in-laws, everything is about relationship building that will then continue to build upon via communication. So build connections, number one, first and foremost. Truly listen, stay curious, show empathy, show humility, then start leading by example. Show your work ethic, show, you know, how you are doing something pretty exemplary, and frankly, advocate for yourself and market yourself in a sense. But frankly, I, in my coaching practice and all of my interactions with other people, I come from more of a psychological standpoint and just human connection and human nature. And sometimes we forget about that because we're so eager to impress our boss. We're so eager to complete that project that we forget to do it in a comfortable, humane way.
And it's like when you see your teacher outside of school and you're like, what are they doing grocery shopping? They should be in the classroom. You know, you don't think of them in that way. And I think with executives, especially, they have a very hard time. And I don't want to generalize, but I think many of them have a very hard time getting on that human level with their staff. They're looked at as more than just a boss. They're a person, they're human. And I think that can be very challenging for more established leaders to do as well.
You're right. I also don't want to generalize, but from my experience, not necessarily with my former CEO, he was so tremendous about really going and seeing the offices, connecting with the staff, staying curious and asking questions and building a rapport. But I see many executives kind of hiding in their corner office or speaking through their staff, even at the secondary level, you know, the VP level or director level. A lot of times they speak through their layers of the direct report. And by all means, that makes sense for the chain of command when you're going through a process. But when you're building a culture and you're trying to build relationships and build rapport, showing that you care about them, that you want to learn about them, and that you yourself are human, you make mistakes, you're learning as well. It goes down to building that relationship and building that human connection. Because as we know, most people leave managers, not necessarily their jobs. So if they have loyalty and rapport with their managers' managers and everything like that, they're more likely to be communicative if they're struggling and feeling burnt out or struggling with their workload or struggling with a coworker. And they're more likely to feel patient as the company is either growing or going through some change or something like that. The stickiness is there when you have that human relationship and connection.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. I think you've made some really great points. When we talk about communication, what are some tips you have for being a better communicator at either level, you know, either as an established CEO or maybe as a new leader who's maybe afraid to approach their boss or somebody higher up in their workplace environment?
I have a few tips, and this is one of my favorite topics to talk about. First and foremost, identify the right time to kickstart that conversation. Don't do it during a high stress time, right after a crappy meeting, or when there's tons of customers in front of you. Identify kind of that sweet spot where it's still timely. I always say within 1 to 2 business days of either an event or consistent, you know, at least once a month. Try to have kind of rapport with one-on-ones at least every 2 weeks. So find the right time and then structure your conversation. The number one goal for anyone having a conversation that may have a conflict nature to it is you want your recipient to not feel defensive. I'm sure we can all relate to times where someone kind of came at you a certain type of way, and human nature, we're going to mirror that behavior and we're going to come at them, and it turns into a tit for tat conflict, conversation versus when you don't feel defensive and someone's sharing information with you that is new or just feels funny to receive. When you feel comfortable receiving it, you then skip the emotional part of wanting to combat it and defend yourself. And you skip that and you go to a receiving, retaining, maybe collaborating. Maybe you have to process it for a day or two. So number one thing is you want your recipient to not feel defensive, because it's going to lend itself to a more effective conversation and dialogue, frankly. Okay, so now you're starting the conversation, the person's not defensive, and the reason why the person's not defensive is because you start that conversation with your intention and your goal. Human nature is when we have a black hole of information or we don't know what the intention is, we automatically assume worst case scenario. You know, this guy cut me off on the road. What a jerk. Versus he's running to a very important interview and he's unemployed, or he's taking his sick child to a sick visit at the pediatrician. So we immediately assume worse intent, and we have to literally practice and stay consistent to have our knee-jerk reaction instead assume positive intent. But instead of making assumptions at all, frankly, just say what your intention is. Hey, I want to pull you aside. I want to talk about what happened earlier. And the reason why is I just want to hear your point of view. And maybe we can work through a way that in the future, we could handle the situation in a more comfortable manner or a more positive way. So you're starting with your intention and then you're ending with your goal. My intention is to address X, Y, and Z. And my goal is to come out of that conversation with 1, 2, 3. Okay, now I know what to expect from this kind of tough, maybe uncomfortable conversation, and I know how we're going to collaborate to come to this end goal. So intention, goal, and then kind of stay curious to collaborate. Hey, what was so upsetting to you about that situation? Or looking back now, what do you think we could have done? Or how could I have supported you to get through that tough customer or that tough meeting? So it's really about, in my opinion, being prepared, number one, being caring, frankly, and being transparent. A lot of times people feel that they don't want to hurt someone's feelings, so they either sugarcoat it and they're not clear. So the person walked away with, what was that conversation about? There's a lot of talking and lecturing, but I have no idea what they actually meant. Were they even real with me? And I always share with my coachees in my previous role with all of the managers and anyone that I would train is you can still be kind and honest at the same time. I wish I could trademark being kindly honest, but it's possible for you to be super transparent and honest in a caring and kind manner. And that's when the person is going to feel less defensive and also going to have actual items and tasks and a focus or a goal that they need to either work on or follow through in. So that's a very long-winded answer, but it's important to have all these components together to create a comfortable environment and an effective dialogue and more importantly, actionable best practices for the next hour, the next day, the next month, the next year.
It's so hard to balance the kindly honest. When I started managing a team, I feel like I either went in and sugarcoated it, or I went in and I was on a mission. Like I knew this was going to be a constructive meeting, and that was the mindset I went in there with. And you know, with time and experience, you realize this kindly honest. I love that, and you definitely should find a way to trademark that because it's so true. Though it's definitely a difficult skill to obtain, especially for when it comes to younger managers in particular who are overseeing employees that are older than them with more industry experience, maybe not more leadership experience, but more industry experience. Do you have any suggestions for that type of dynamic? We're seeing what, 5 generations in the workplace, you're going to have this dynamic.
Elena, I was that young manager that was overseeing women, men that were older than me, more experienced than me, with more credentials, either MBA, SHRM certificates. And it was really tough for me. And I share this recently on my LinkedIn, and I will scream it from the rooftops. I was horrible when I first started managing. People didn't like me. I was cutthroat. I honestly sucked. I was a horrible manager. And the reason why is I had zero self-awareness. I had zero humility and zero experience. And because I didn't have humility, I thought I knew everything. And I was just managing the way I used to be managed and it worked well for me. And I wanted people to work the way I work. And I had learned many hard lessons through failure that not everyone is like me. Not everyone receives feedback, wants recognition the way I do. Everyone is different. Everyone gets their confidence from different manners. Everyone has different sensitivities. And once I learned that and I increased my self-awareness and my social awareness, I was able to really do a 180 and become that well-loved, likable manager. I mean, one of the biggest prides that I have right now is all the relationships that I'm still in contact with and still in touch with from years of experience of all the different people that I worked with. I still get text messages from former managers and former people that I work with. You know, I miss you. How are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. So to go back to your question, a younger manager, a millennial like myself that is now managing someone that has more years of life and more experience, call a spade a spade. Again, go back to just being real and building that connection and that relationship. Recognize, wow, you do have tremendous experience. And frankly, my goal is to learn from you. And I hope that you're able to also learn from me because we both, while we have different years and levels of experience, we both have different perspectives that I think if we put together, we can make even more success and create more wins within our team, our department, or whatever the case is. So stay curious and play to their ego. Try to learn from them, get them to feel comfortable with you and want to then learn from you, listen to you, give them space to shine where their strengths really are, and then navigate how you can lift weaknesses or perhaps put them in a better job fit or whatever the case may be for that individual. But start off with building that connection, building that rapport, calling a spade, learning from them. And eventually they're going to learn from you because you're going to be leading by example in a way that is going to be new to them, most likely.
Really, really great information and intel. I also want to look at it from companies' perspectives as well. So when you work with companies who are trying to create a strong culture, what are mistakes that you're seeing a lot of leaders make? All we're hearing is culture, culture, culture within companies, especially because of the pandemic. People aren't going into the office as much. So we're seeing major issues with culture, maybe even more so than we saw before. And maybe they were always there, but it's more prevalent because of the working dynamic.
Naturally, the C-suite is going to care about the bottom line. They're going to care about profits. So they're going to care about numbers and data and revenue and your P&L and where can we shave on our expenses? Where can we shave on our salaries? It's natural. And frankly, they should care about keeping their company financially healthy. But where most leaders, I shouldn't say most, but where leaders can make a mistake that I have seen myself through my clients and other experiences is they only care about the numbers and they only care about profits. And sure, turnover costs a certain number, but CFOs don't see that actual number on a P&L. So the turnover is like, oh. Where many companies can improve on is actually spending dollars on culture, spending it the best way possible, the most effective way possible. But I see so many times companies wanting to be budget conscious, so they don't spend money on ongoing leadership trainings, on building a coaching culture, on giving, a learning and development reimbursement, annual fee for people that want to continue their education or whatever the case may be. They don't spend time perhaps closing their office or, the business to do professional development or anything like that, because again, they want the numbers, which makes sense, but it's all about balancing. And many times that balance isn't there. They don't lead by example. As we know, behaviors and culture starts from the top. If C-suite and VPs and the senior leadership team are cutthroat, but they're preaching to be caring and to have this kind of engagement and this kind of retention and all that, but they're not leading by example, forget it. You're going to build resentment within your staff. Staff are very, very smart. And they have feelings and emotions, and they notice when it's really not from the top. If you think of CEOs that were that stand out, that's because they're people-focused CEOs. Those are the CEOs that stand out. So leading by example and knowing their employees. Many senior leadership teams are just focused on their world, focus on the employees' world. What kind of socioeconomic makeup is a majority of their staff? What is their world like? What can we do to give back to help them to make a real impact in their personal and professional lives? What do they like? Besides money, there's more that we can do in addition to money. Of course, everyone wants to make a great living. But what are some kind of emotion-driven activities, recognition, programs that you can do for your employees that are really going to make them feel connected to their organization, to their managers, to their managers' managers, and then in return, stay loyal, stay happy, which is then going to give you the biggest ROI because they're going to be great to their customers and the customers are going to keep coming back. And you're going to then meet that financial profit goal. So it's a beautiful cycle if you do it the right way. You treat your people well, they're going to treat the customers well, the customers are going to treat the business well. It's simple, but a lot of times leaders are thinking just about the customers and the business and not the people.
And you've had plenty of experience doing this because when you were the VP of employee experience at your prior job, you had reduced employee turnover, which you had mentioned in the beginning, from 60% to 26% in just a year. So you've talked about some of these approaches that you've probably utilized there that you've just talked about, but is there anything else, any other approaches or strategies you used to get that type of retention?
Yes. I will also share that have to give credit to that turnover reduction to Dr. Eric Schweiger, the CEO, the senior leadership team at the time, because they collectively with myself, we built strong core values that really explained basically behaviors that we wanted in the environments across all of our offices. To give context, I still talk like I'm there because it was such a part of my identity for so long. And I love the company so much till this day. It changed my life and it taught me so much. And I wouldn't be a coach if I didn't get that opportunity. But we are a large dermatology group practice, multi-locations. The corporate team is hybrid, if you will, but all of the offices, they're dermatology practices. So they're medical assistants, patient coordinators, aka front desk receptionists, doctors, physician assistants, and whatnot. So it was two kind of large different groups of employee types, right? We had the hourly non-exempt employees. We had a few managers and then highly educated clinicians. So how can we get through to all of these employee types at once? So what we did was built out core values, employee programs, a meeting rhythm, a really strong orientation and onboarding program. And part of what I recommend to all companies is to develop and give back to their employees. And you can do this for a not much of a heavy lift. It will take dollars, surely, but you're grooming your next batch of leaders while also sustaining loyalty across those that maybe don't want to grow and they just are happy where they are, but they're still growing in some way. Human beings, we want to grow. We want to learn. We don't want to stay stagnant. So how can we give some sort of growth opportunity? It doesn't mean climbing the ladder, but it means learning best practices for basic email etiquette, up to psychological safety in team meetings, communication 101 to delivering feedback, how to put someone on a coaching plan. There's so much that we can teach employees that are hardworking, ambitious, that most companies, those high individual contributors, the natural next step is then get promoted. And then they're expected to manage other people just by learning how to do so by breathing the air because they're just really good at doing their individual job. But it's a whole different skill set. So to answer your question in a more succinct way, building an engagement program and an ongoing professional development program to give back and really develop and care for your employees, so that they can care for your customers, which will care for your financial health and dollars. And by the way, I love to do leadership training. So as a shameless plug, that's something that is another passion of mine in addition to individual coaching.
There's such a need for that. When I started working at our firm, I had already come from another office that was extremely professional. So I had that etiquette built in. We just assume that people have this knowledge that they don't have. And then we get upset when they don't perform the way we want them to. I think that's really great that you're hitting those segments of the market that I feel like when we hear, you know, executive coach, we think, okay, it's a coach for somebody who's higher level. We don't think about a leadership coach in the sense that you're talking about the whole picture of it, from emerging leaders to leadership training, just to basic etiquette. I think those are all parts of the market that are often missed.
I agree with you. And it would be as simple as putting together a curriculum of topics addressed and then putting together intimate, I would say, ideally 6 to 10, but it could be larger, quite frankly. Some companies don't have the luxury of having such smaller groups, but ongoing training, ongoing care, and ongoing education to build a really strong foundation of, frankly, behaviors and performance and communication expected at work. You're absolutely right. Most companies don't do that because frankly, they don't have the dollars for it, which makes sense, but you can make the dollars. You can eliminate some, you know, discretionary spending to make the dollars. And most times it's not a very attractive thing to do because that ROI is a long lead project. It's not, you don't see that ROI quickly. You know, it's something that you have to invest in and train little by little. And you don't see that ROI right away, but you do see it. You do feel it. It's in the air. It's in the energy. And eventually it will snowball and will become the norm if you do it the right way and consistently.
And I think too, companies are, the companies that are investing in their teams, they're investing in industry knowledge, which is great. But I think this segment of the market is missing, and the industry knowledge is wonderful. But if you can't retain the talent, it doesn't matter how much industry knowledge you have. They're going to take that and they're going to go somewhere else and they're going to build somebody else's wonderful team who has a great culture. So I think you raise a really, really
Elena, I just have to say one quick thing to that, that I clearly feel passionate about among everything else we're talking about. You could be the smartest individual. You can have every credential. You could be a PhD, a doctor, an MBA, what have you. But if you're a jerk and if you don't know how to work with people and people don't like working for you, you're, all of your credentials and all of your hard skills are pointless if you don't know how to be a caring, empathetic, chameleon leader. So I say to people all the time, if you don't know how to, if you don't have strong soft skills, your hard skills, frankly, doesn't really matter.
This idea about self-awareness, it's really hard as a leader to have self-awareness if it's not something that's innate with you. I think some people innately have self-awareness. Other people really struggle with it and they're not able to kind of read the room as well as others. Do you have any suggestions or tips for building self-awareness among people who struggle with that?
I agree with everything that you said, and I will piggyback on that with your permission to say, most times the self-awareness isn't there because ego is the barrier. Everyone's fighting for themselves. They want to get that promotion. They want to make an extra 10,000, however much more a year. So they're just trying to show themselves, you know, market for themselves, be the successful person on that project, and frankly, selfishly gain success. So self-awareness is like, I'm just trying to move up and I'm just trying to win. And the self-awareness isn't there because the ego is kind of blocking it. I had zero self-awareness. I look back and I'm like, oh my God. I mean, I didn't get my self-awareness, frankly, until the last few years in my mid-30s. And boy, do I wish if I had a stronger self-awareness, which would then lead to social awareness, I would have been more successful. I would have failed less. And so I wish that I had it sooner. And that's why one of my passions when I do help younger leaders or younger high potentials is to build that self-awareness. So to answer your question, I'm a consultant with Predictive Index. It's a personality assessment that's been around since the 50s. I've taken so many personality assessments. And my goal when I started my coaching practice is to have one in my toolbox to help supplement and build self-awareness. So there's many out there. I'm sure if you Google it, some are better than others. But why I like Predictive Index is because it gives you your four behavior traits and drivers that you naturally innately have. Then it gives you what you, it's called self-concept, what you think your job expects you to have. And then it's called synthesis, how you actually are showing up. The four areas is dominance, extroversion, patience, and formality. Where are you in that scale of all four? Where do you feel like you are expected to show up? And then how do you actually show up? That is such an eye opener, in particular for those that don't have self-awareness. Don't even know that they don't have self-awareness. I've never taken a personality assessment. It's helpful for them, for their team members, and for their direct reports. So that would be my number one tip, is to start with some sort of personality assessment. Obviously, I have a bias towards predictive index. It's tried and true. And start to build your self-awareness and start to also build your confidence so that you can let go of your ego and build your humility and build your soft skills, your communication skills, and you being a chameleon to connect.
Now, would you say that that path would be the same for middle manager, executives, first-time leaders? I think sometimes as a first-time leader, maybe they're at a company who doesn't invest in their leadership, but they know that this is an area they need to work on. Would you suggest they start there as well?
I would, but if they've already, most likely, if they're a mid-career manager or an executive, they probably have higher than average self-awareness, and they probably have already taken a personality assessment. So where you can take it to almost the next level, phase two, if you will, is build your social awareness. So Predictive Index also has different tools and software that can help kind of tag where everyone is in their personalities and then how they can work better together. And that will help drive synergy and help drive social awareness, which will then help drive effectiveness and how your communication is landing and how your team, that individual, is performing, which will then give you the profit goals that you're hopefully hoping to achieve. Sure.
Something else you're passionate about is workplace burnout. And it's an issue that's prevalent in our country across all different industry areas. How can we better avoid this, both as leaders, but also as employees?
I'll start with employees. Workplace burnout, based on my experience and what I've seen as a former corporate executive of 10 years and as a leadership coach for the last 10 months, it's either one of two things. It's a poor job fit, where they're not in the right job. So what they actually have to do is so stressful and de-energizing. It takes them twice, three times, four times the amount of energy to do something because they're not in the right role. And so what leaders can do is identify that. Again, that's where the predictive index is great, because it sees yourself, your self-concept, and then how you're actually showing up. And if the self and self-concept are opposite, there's a good chance you're not in the right role. So leaders can alter that and move them to a better role. And we used to do this a lot at Traeger Dermatology Group, and the individual would end up flourishing and thriving. The second thing, again, going to employees, and then I'll speak to the leaders, is boundaries. Many times, workplace burnout is not necessarily the employer's fault. It's our fault for putting too much pressure on ourselves and not being disciplined to put boundaries on ourselves. Unless you're working in the ER or a real, healthcare critical environment, you're not saving lives. And so there is opportunity for you to put yourself first and for you to really be disciplined with your boundaries, because grass may not be greener. The devil you know may be better than the devil you don't know, if that's even the right way to say it. But starting another job, a lot of people think that's the default answer to workplace burnout. But now you're starting another job. You have to put so much energy to meet new people, build relationships, prove yourself. You're probably going to work extra hard in the first 90 to 120 days. So you're just transferring burnout in just a different formula and different puzzle. So my advice for employees would first figure out, where can I put better boundaries? Is my workload truly heavy? And if so, don't just quit on your boss. Do your best to go to your boss and say, hey, I need your help prioritizing. I'm kind of drowning right now. I'm constantly in the weeds. I'm not learning. I'm not growing. I don't feel energized when I come to work. I plotted out all of the things that I work on a weekly basis. And here are the things that I don't love to do. I don't think I'm very good at. It's time consuming, and I don't think it's adding value. How can we reprioritize? Help me kind of get into a better place. I really need your help. Can we work through this? Give them a chance. Give your employer a chance to recalibrate your workload or recalibrate your role or the team that you're in. By all means, give them a chance. You do everything in your power to make it work and they just don't bite and it doesn't get better. Sure, please. I can also do career coaching, so I can help you find a new job. But do your best to check yourself in what expectations are you placing on yourself. Check with your boss. How can you reprioritize and recalibrate your workload or your position? And that most times can resolve the burnout feeling. And if it doesn't, surely, absolutely make a change. Don't continue to just be the hamster in the wheel for years and years, because then you're going to look back and you're going to have regret. And that's never fun.
I think a lot of us struggle with perfectionism, myself particularly. I didn't even want to do this podcast when we first were talking about it, because I knew I wasn't going to be perfect at it. And I don't podcast. I've never used any of these softwares. I have no idea what I'm doing. This microphone was, you know, from a YouTube video, you know, and you're terrified because you don't want to fail. But sometimes you have to just get started. Along the vein of perfectionism comes imposter syndrome. And you have said in the past that you don't believe in imposter syndrome. And I love your answer for this. I've seen it on your social media. So I want you to speak to that a little bit and why you feel that way.
Human beings have been second guessing themselves since the beginning of time. That's human nature. Unless you're highly arrogant, which is, I think, the minority of the human population, you're going to feel uneasy doing something for the first time, or you're going to seek that validation and you're going to second guess yourself until you get it. So the reason why I don't necessarily believe in imposter syndrome is because to me, it's a trendy label that has a shameful kind of energy to it. And everyone's labeling themselves like, I have imposter syndrome. I have imposter syndrome. No, you're a human being in a most likely growing, aka new situation, new project, new role, you know, growing and learning. And you're naturally wondering how you're doing as you're evolving and growing. So I think that it's natural to second guess yourself. I go back to mindset, and you have to stay confident. You have to stop those negative thoughts and figure out exercises around that to do your best, to just put your best foot forward. If you're doing your best, that's all anyone could ever ask of you. But I don't like imposter syndrome because it has a negative connotation. It has a label to it that is just trendy right now. And it's putting people in this like box that they shouldn't really be in and they don't deserve to be in, frankly.
I agree with you. And I've never heard it talked about in the way that you've talked about it before. So I'm really glad you were able to speak to that a little bit more. I know we're coming up on time. Before we close out, can you give us any leadership book, podcast, recommendations? We've been asking this to all of our guests and our staff have loved these book recommendations. So tell us.
Yes. So I have two easy ones and two must-haves, a little bit of a longer read. The two easy ones are both by Patrick Lencioni, The Ideal Team Player. This applies to any team in any industry. And then 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. This one in particular, I like for executives and senior leadership team members. The other two that are life-changing and very impactful and frankly written years and years and years ago, it's not like the new hot book that's out right now, but it's tried and true, is first, I love The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, and How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. That will really give you tips and tricks on time management, organization, being effective, and tips and tricks on how to build relationships, build those connections, build rapport. That really is the foundation of team success.
Great suggestions, and 2 of my favorite books, I will tell you.
That
would be on my top 5 list of leadership books. So we're thinking
of you. Great minds.
You're speaking my language. So cool. Anna, thank you so much for being with us today. This was so, so insightful.
Thank you so much for having me on this podcast. It was my first one. You made it so easy and I'm so honored.
You were great. Thank you.
Anna Welsh is a guiding light for leaders. Rather than focusing on just numbers and profits, Anna gives executives the tools they need to build a winning culture, which in turn will create a thriving business. Anna shares how new leaders can navigate difficult conversations, workplace burnout, self-doubt, and effectively manage up. To learn more about Anna's services, we'll link her website and social media channels in the show notes. We'll be sure to include her leadership book recommendations as well. Stay tuned for part two of this enlightening conversation, where we'll continue to explore Anna's strategies for success.